Right, you're live on Arms Room with Glenn.
And John.
Oh, man.
But we're not live.
We're not. You're on the Arms Room.
You're on the Arms Room.
It makes me a little sadder.
A little bit.
We're otherwise engaged today, so we apologize. We had to pre-record this show. We are coming to you. It would have been 5 years. I still don't get this, all right?
We're coming to you in the present.
In the present.
From the past.
From the past.
But it's our future.
But it's in the future.
Yeah.
That's correct. Yeah.
The past of the present in the future.
Oof, man. That's a hell of a concept.
Difficult to wrap your brain around at all.
If you went back in time, I mean, there's all these like theories, right? And you didn't change anything. The theory is you would still change something.
Butterfly effect.
Chaos. If you went back in time. And you could tell yourself one thing. Which chick would you bang?
Oh, that's hilarious. There's one.
Yeah, there's always one.
Everybody just had something pop into their head.
There's always instantly too. Bing! No,
I had to think about it for a second because there were a few over the years that I didn't, but there's one that I. Because it would have been a mean, hateful...
Ooh, like, that's rough.
It would have been great.
All right.
It would have been a good one.
Thank you, patrons, for participating in our show. Remember the shows. Remember the blogs. Or the show reviews, I mean. Remember the blogs. Remember the extra show that we did last week, even though we still haven't done it yet. Remember that. And yeah, check that out. And we are, of course, in our AR-500 Armor studio. So thank you to them for allowing us to be... a great partner with them in this project, and we appreciate their support. You know, even back in the day when we used to be over in the Scottsdale location, the actual radio studio, when we used to be a radio show, when we very first started, we were like legitimately tuned into us on a radio station, radio show, and we were broadcast on AFN, which back then really sucked because
we couldn't curse.
We couldn't curse, and every time we did, they had to go back and bleep it out because we were on AFN.
Yeah, I wouldn't have got too far into the
It was really
podcast.
Tough for me, man. It was really hard. But back then, AR-500 Arma was actually one of our very first official show sponsors.
Yeah.
Yeah, they sponsored us for a long time. And now we've really furthered that relationship even more by moving in here. And really cool stuff coming in the future. Cool. Lots of cool video content, lots of cool shows coming. Just stay tuned, guys, because there's a lot of cool things. This month, the product we're talking about for AR-500 Armor is their helmets. Now, last week, we kind of talked about, hey, if you don't have a helmet and you have a need for one, you should get one, right? Now, I'm going to talk about the protective capabilities of helmets, because there's a lot of myths and misconceptions about what a protective helmet actually protects against. First of all, not rifle, all right? These are 3A... capable helmets. Yes, rifle, if at a perfect angle under good circumstances.
At the right.
Yes. The right distance, the right angle.
A round will ride them. And not necessarily penetrate your skull.
And we've seen rounds go in one side of the helmet, out the other side, that if you looked at it, you'd be like, holy shit, this shot the dude in the head, but it didn't. And went in the helmet,
was
bounced around inside the helmet,
by
and then kicked out the back. We've all seen that kind of crazy shit happen. But we also know that a helmet, direct round, rifle, no dice.
Yeah, no
right.
No.
So, you know, understand what the capabilities of the protection are. They're primarily there to protect against
overhead fragmentation.
Exactly, overhead fragmentation to prevent from anything going into your skull. They're not really there as much for rifle or handgun protection, though they are 3A, so they do protect against handguns. I can only imagine the freaking headache you would have. Smacked in the head a couple times with a freaking pistol round, but ring-a-ding-ding. But I know I have a buddy of mine who was on a SWAT team, and he took a .22 Magnum. They made entry. He was second man in. It's always the second man who gets shot. They were second man in, and they had these two shitheads behind a wall that was adjacent to the door, actually just shooting through the wall randomly. And they weren't really hitting anything important, but this my buddy... when he turned, it was like one of those, turned his head perfectly and just dipped his helmet enough that it hit him right on the rim.
Oh.
And he said even a .22 Magnum sounded like something detonated inside his helmet.
Oh, you know,
he said it was really uncomfortable. And he continued to fight through it, and they apprehended the guys and all that kind of stuff. But he said it was really, really uncomfortable.
Did he have a concussion?
I don't think he had like a full-on concussion, but yeah, I think it rattled him around. Like you said, it sounded like something deadening. He initially fell down because he thought he got shot in the head.
Oh, wow.
You know, he thought he was shot in the face because he's like, I literally saw the impact, and he's like, it like kind of blacked his eye out, and he was like, oh, I just got shot in the eye. You know, so he's like, initially he kind of went down, and he stumbled back up to his feet when he realized he wasn't actually hurt. And he said, he's a big dude. And he said it was...
terrifying?
It was, yeah, pretty shitty. Yeah. I mean, the worst thing I've ever done while wearing a helmet is hit my head real hard.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? That's never took a round of the helmet or anything.
Can't tell you how many times I've driven my head into the bottom of a fucking Mod Deuce coming up into a turret.
Oh, yeah.
Thank God for helmets.
Yeah.
And even that, dude.
How tall guys fit in turrets, I don't get, man. Anytime I had to sling up into a turret or do anything like that, I'm really glad I'm small, man. Because even then, you're jammed. Your shit's getting hooked. You're always cutting your arms open on everything, trying to get it. Like, I don't know how people did it, man. Big dudes.
Mm-mm. And not a big dude compliance.
And now it's like all the MRAPs and stuff, which is after my time, those weird shaped doors. I'm sure you guys knock yourselves around with those stupid doors all the freaking time.
Heavy.
Yeah, that's all after my time.
It's terrible.
Crazy shit.
Pretty terrible.
All right. So, you know, we don't really have any news to talk to you guys about because obviously it's in the future for us, current for you.
Shitty things.
Your politicians still suck. The world's still a relatively decent place to live in. America's still free, even though don't get all crazy about how much freedom you do and do not have. What else? You should definitely learn how to protect yourself because no one's coming to save you. If you think someone's coming to save you, you're a fucking moron. What else?
Or wildly misinformed, which basically means you're a moron.
It's the same. Anything else? Hang on,
No.
Toaster is broken. Yep. And no one actually knows what color the dinosaurs were.
No, they don't. I had an argument with my 8-year-old son about dinosaurs. He's like, Dad, it's like, do dinosaurs still exist? And I said, no. He said, chickens are dinosaurs. I said, you're wrong, son. Chickens are descendants of dinosaurs. They are not actual dinosaurs. Dinosaurs no longer exist. And he goes, you're right, Dad. And I said, I fucking know. This is like these are the arguments I have in my life.
Yeah.
Dinosaurs
it's important
are
when you have kids.
No,
yeah.
They're not.
Yeah.
They're not. They're not. I don't know that they ever actually existed.
I just look at an alligator and I go, that's a dinosaur.
Yeah. That's how I feel. And Gila
monster. I look at a condor and I'm like, that's a dinosaur. Yeah. I look at any animal that's been around for a really, really long time and I go, that's what a dinosaur looks like. The end. Yeah. I don't really have to think about it beyond that. People are like, what if they were purple? I'm like, they probably wouldn't live very long. I don't know if you know this, but purple shit stands out.
that's how you get eaten.
Yeah. It's like, so whenever you look at books and there's all these multicolored dinosaurs, I'm like, that's probably not true.
They're probably all, like, brown.
Yeah, like, I mean,
boringly brown.
Look at the animals now, right? Like, a deer, you're like, it's a brown deer, or hard can it be to see? Pretty freaking hard, actually, yeah. Like, a gray squirrel in the desert, how hard can it be?
Super hard, actually.
Pretty freaking hard to see them, actually, yeah. They blend in really well. They have natural camouflage. I just imagine that's probably what dinosaurs had. You see a red dinosaur in a movie, like, that's bullshit.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. There you go.
But what if you lived in Sedona where all the rocks were red?
All right. I'm not doing this. Red wire gear moment. Go. Wait, hold on. What if it lived by the ocean? It could look like that gay Navy camo.
Which, by the way, they've totally gotten rid of again.
Yeah, you want to know why?
Because when you fall overboard, you fucking disappear. Like, even more so than you did beforehand.
Do you want to know what I wear when I'm on a Navy boat? If I was going to be on one? Bright orange.
Floaty things.
Floaty stuff, bright orange. I want to be seen by, I don't know, airplanes taking off on the deck.
Everyone.
Helicopters coming into
everyone
land.
Everyone but sharks. That's what I want to see me.
So, like, yeah. What's a shark color spectrum? Don't put me in that. Other than that, put me in everything that's super bright. Like, what if you're getting attacked in the blizzard? Like, it doesn't matter. They're shooting at the boat. Not me. All right?
There's a reason the boat's not
blue and
white.
If I fall in the water, I want everyone to see me.
Ships are gray and white for a reason.
And I'm the kind of guy that if I was on a boat in the middle of the ocean for a really long period of time, I'm going to fall in the water, right? Because I'm going to do some. Bet you can't rappel off the side. Bet you can't drink 8 of these, right? Shit like that. And then I'm in the ocean.
It's going to happen to anybody.
Wait, hold on. Having been a dude people right here. On a boat for extended periods of time in the middle of the ocean with some of the dumbest people on the face of the planet, none of those things ever happened.
No?
None.
No one falls over? Really?
Yep.
I would be the one guy.
Is this self-preservation that keeps people on board?
You got it. All
right. I don't know. I know this.
It's fucking Groundhog Day. For sure. It's Groundhog Day. Right. Like, same as day close over to and over you and over can again. Get. Period.
If you like repetition, have you thought about the U.S. Navy?
But, generally speaking, on the boats, the ships that I was on, I wasn't on aircraft carriers, on the Gator-class ships, which are one size smaller than aircraft carriers. Right. This is a pretty big ship.
Right.
I mean, it's a pretty big fucking thing, right?
Yeah.
And there's very few areas where you can go that you actually have access to easily get off.
I bet that's by design.
Probably.
Yeah, I'm just going to say based on the ASVAB test and my experience in the military, it's by design.
Now, I have seen a CH-46 laying in one of the nets.
Well, yeah. I mean, you see that kind of shit even on videos and stuff. You know, helos come in, they zig when they're supposed to zag.
So ships do this. Yeah. and I'm doing this like there's no video
to that. Right. But yeah. They so come
everything,
up.
They're going up, they're going down, they're going left, they're going right. All at the same time.
Right.
Which, by the way, is either the best sleep you've ever had or the worst sleep you've ever had. Right. There's no middle ground there.
Right.
And as the helicopter's landing, sometimes the ship goes up when the pilot thought it was going to go down.
Sure.
Generally speaking, they're able to control that unless it's a really hard shift. So the bird will hit, and the first time I landed on a ship in a helicopter, I thought I was going to die. I was certain that we were going overboard. But sometimes shit like that happens. Mm-hmm. So, but it's really hard to actually fall off of a Navy vessel, at least the ones that I've been on.
I know
it's
that
really hard.
The only ones I've ever been on are like museum ones, like the USS Midway in San Diego or something, right? I never spent any time on a ship. So... when I'm on that boat, all I know is ship, boat, craft, whatever. All I know is when I'm up on the deck and you look over the edge and you see the water, like you could jump off the one in San Diego, right? The USS Midway is open enough to
the battleship.
You just hop off, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's a carrier. Aircraft carrier. USS Midway.
Yes,
carrier.
Okay. Yeah,
you're so right. It's like either way, you're on the deck up top. You know, they have fences around, but the fence is freaking 4 feet tall. You know what I mean?
But it no longer has its safety catch nets.
It does on some of them. It actually has a lot of them around, but. I look over, you can look over at one point, like, see out, and I'm like, I don't want to fall off this. Like, I think of the self-preservation thing. You're just like, pretty far down there.
Yeah, I don't...
And this is in a bay. In the ocean, you'd be like, ugh.
No.
Two things kept me out of the Navy. Three things kept me out of the Navy. One, heterosexuality. Two, hot bunking. C, number one. Three...
That's a submarine issue, not generally
rogue
a ship issue.
Waves. Have you seen that shit?
No, but I have seen whitewater come over the deck of the USS Bonhomme Richard.
Dude, I've
it was
seen
fucking terrifying.
I've seen rogue waves smash into the con of a freaking aircraft carrier, which is like I don't know how many stories above the earth.
Yeah, yeah, I'm like,
Wait. There's waves that tall?
Yeah, there's a reason why I didn't join the Navy. I'm terrified of shit like that.
I'm happy.
Yeah,
I'm happy on the land.
Rough seas are pretty amazing. You can actually float in your bed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You just float because the ship's
moving
so hard.
So much.
That you're just like, oh God. Oh God. Oh God.
Yeah, no thanks.
Yeah, nothing about that sounds appealing.
It's fucking terrible.
Stick me on a mountain for a week and leave me alone.
Yeah, I'm happy there. Yeah, I'm happy on a mountain.
It's terrible.
Put me in a mountain, put me in a desert, put me in a forest.
Yeah.
I don't care.
I like that. I like my trucks now.
Yeah. Oh, hell. All right. All right. Red Rock, your moment, go.
Access to tools. It's something that comes up quite a bit. It's something we briefly talked about on the last week's show, the last episode of The Arms Room. If you, whatever your tool is, I don't care what it is. If it's your hammer, if it's your drill, if it's your handgun, if it's your tourniquet, if it's whatever your equipment or your tool is, make sure that you have appropriate access to it in as many situations as possible. Because if you try to start what-ifing it, you're going to get bored and you're going to stop and you're just going to decide not to carry it. Well, what if I end up upside down, hung by my big toe with both hands tied behind my back? Well, then you're probably going to die and you've made some pretty terrible life choices up to this point. So make sure you can access your tools in the majority of the situations that you normally find yourself in.
Okay. Red Bar Gear Moment brought to you by RedBarGear.com. All right. Our topic for the day is preparing for a personal economic crisis or change. And this was a topic request that we got from a couple different listeners. One of them gave us some kind of things specifically they wanted us to talk about. And another one just kind of asked us, like, you know, what do you guys think? Or their question was more like, have you guys ever been through this kind of thing where you had like a drastic change in your life? Yeah, for sure. There's definitely been times in my life where I've made more money or less money, or had more in savings or had less in savings. I've been more financially responsible for things or people, or less financially responsible for things or people. So, yeah, I mean, job changes, all that kind of stuff. I've experienced all that, you know. I think some people go through their life and don't. You know, they get with a company, they're with that company for 25 years or whatever, and they retire. I'm not that guy.
That's becoming less and less of a thing.
It is becoming less and less of a thing, for sure.
You know, because the whole system is not set up the way that it was for our parents and grandparents. And
the boomer type.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, even that, but just you have to move out to move up kind of thing.
I've had
previous jobs where people were 16, 17, 18 years in, and they were only like one or two levels above me, where they should have been way higher.
Right. And you have to change around to different companies. I mean, it's like, you know, Drew worked in the banking industry, and it's the same thing. Like, yeah, that's a common industry. You have like someone move around to different banks. Like, oh, you want a manager position, you got to go over here. Oh, you want to move from a teller to a personal banker, you want to move from a personal banker to a, you know, assistant manager. You want to move from an assistant manager to a manager. You want to move from a manager to a director, whatever. Like, you got to change businesses. I mean, most of those bankers who are higher level of work for three or four major banks over the years, just because you got to move out to move up for any reason. People get stuck in a position. They're not moving until they retire, whatever it is, you know. So, so I've got some different notes here. And understand this before we get involved in this. There is nobody sitting around these tables here in this room who I would probably qualify as a financial expert.
Not even close.
Yeah, there are no financial advisors sitting at this table. Yeah.
I don't have a degree, a certificate, nothing. I have a good credit score. That's about it.
I have a good credit. I also have a good credit score. I guess that's got to say something, right? But also, I have had a really bad credit score.
I've gone from having
a great credit score to having a horrible credit score to now having a good credit score again.
Yeah.
I've certainly experienced all those things. And like most things that we've all of us have experienced in our lives, I think it makes us more well-rounded people, right? So the first thing I would say, again, with the idea of we are not any kind of personal professional
generic advice that you could probably find on Google.
But this is based on our experience. So I think there's a lot of validity here. It's almost like our training, you know what I mean? There's some of this is going to be based on like science and facts, and then there's some of this is going to be based on, hey, man, this is just my experience, and it's worked enough times for me, it may work for you. The first thing is actually the worst thing for me, and that's a budget.
Yeah.
I am the worst at a budget, and here's why. Over the last...
almost decade?
Well, over a decade, really. I have not... when the financial crisis hit... so after the military, I went into construction,
because
that's what I grew up doing. And I did have a short stint working in an electronics company, which was actually really fun. I really enjoyed it. We did like home theater stuff, and I actually really dug that. It was a lot of fun. And then I got involved in construction, and that's what I did growing up. My old man did that, so I worked for him all the time, and I was really good at it. I like being outside. I like working hard. I enjoy hard labor. I like working with my hands, and I worked in concrete. I loved it. I still enjoy doing concrete. I still enjoy finishing concrete. Probably enjoy it more now because I don't have to do it every day, but I still like to, you know, help a friend pour a slab or, you know, pour a little patio or something. I dig it, man. It's cool. It's cool to see that finished product. When the financial crisis of, you know, the late 2000s there hit us, in the construction world, it was devastating.
Dude, it crushed construction. When the housing market burst, dude, it decimated construction
companies. It was the worst financial state I've ever been in my life. Now, I'm a hard worker, and I pride myself on that. And I have a diversified skill set and pride myself on that, too. So I stayed alive. Well, I had kids and wife and... you know, a nice house and all that, and I didn't really lose anything. You know what I mean? I lost over 50% of my investment money, things that I had saved up. I lost tens of thousands of dollars. I lost that. I lost my credit because I had to start doing things I didn't want to do, like going into debt and things like that. But during that time, I watched people just get crushed. Whole companies went out of business, and big, huge companies went out of business. And during that time, my budget went to shit, because at this point, I'm now literally we would go to work out of a 5-day normal work schedule. We were only working, you know, 2 to 3 days a week. Mm-hmm. But we never really knew what days those were. And so I was also working a side job that I could kind of do at my own free will. And I was picking up like side jobs doing concrete and things like that. I started doing everything I could, man. I was like landscaping for people. I was like building cabinets for people. I painted a couple houses. I mean, I did anything that I could freaking do to make some money, right? Because it was a hard time. And I was already training at this point, but I wasn't working on my own. I was working for other people, but it was a side job. You know, so that was one of the side jobs I had. And so I really didn't have a budget. And then when everything happened with the company, our income is so different because, you know, we may teach a whole bunch of classes in a week or in a month or whatever, and they have a month or two, or maybe we're not doing as much, or we're doing more administrative shit, or we're focusing on a different project or whatever. And so things really ebb and flow. So it's really hard for me personally to stay on like a regular budget. Like it's hard for me to go like, oh, this month I have $3,000 coming in or whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then be like, my bills are $2,000, so I will take $500 of this $1,000, and I will put $500 in the savings, and I will have $500 of expendable income, and voila, budget is complete. Like, I can't do that. You know what I mean? I can do it probably.
I think you could.
Maybe.
So, but, and here's the other thing with that. The whole English language thing, right? And different words have different connotations. Budget, much like the word diet, has a negative connotation.
Correct.
It's a budget. It's strict. You have to adhere to it.
Right?
You don't. Don't make a budget. Make a spending plan. Right?
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, like a lifestyle that change.
That's true.
What it, yeah. If you want a diet to work. And I don't say that to soften the English language. I say that to help soften the blow of what's about to happen to your psyche, to your own mental well-being. You know, you have to reframe things sometimes. So you've been in business for a while, right? You know those ebbs and flows for the most part. They kind of follow a pattern. I know my business does. I know my industry follows a pattern of good months and poor months and mediocre months. And, you know, it's a fairly steady cycle. So if you, those of you that are listening to this, are in that same kind of thing, once you get through a couple of those cycles, a year and a half, 2 years of business, and you've seen that there's a trend here, right? And you know what your hard expenses are,
sure,
right? You go, okay, cool. These are the hard expenses. These are the ones that fluctuate a little bit. So like a hard expense would be your mortgage.
Sure.
Soft expense would be your electric bill because that ebbs and flows.
Sure. Right?
And you can average that out.
You can, yeah.
So you look at that over those months and you go, okay, so on these high months, I need to put X extra amount of dollars into this account to cover this expense next month because I know that next month is a dip in income, right? But I had a surplus of income this month.
Well, so what you're getting into is point number two, which is saving.
Yeah. Mm, yeah.
Because this
planning.
This is how you're planning for the future.
Right.
Right. Because you know that this expense is going to come up month after month after month.
Right.
Instead of just blowing all your money right now.
Yes.
Because you have, okay, I have $5. I'm going to spend $5. Mm-hmm. And then next week when you need $5, you're like, shit. I was like, well, you could have used last week's $5 to take care of the $5 you needed this week if you wouldn't have just blown it on some frivolous shit because you didn't plan ahead. Now you're fucked. So, I mean, you get that kind of stuff going on.
Yeah.
From a saving perspective, well, actually, let's take one step back.
Okay.
From a spending plan, which is important, let's move on to being debt-free. Now, when I say debt-free, I mean debt-free. Some people say, well, there's good debts. That's incorrect.
No.
There are no good debts. A good debt, or a car is a good debt,
so
or
I've
education
had
is a good debt. I don't think any of it is a good debt. Debt is debt.
I've had a house for 11 years now. Do you know how many times I haven't met the deduction and been able to write off my interest rate on my house? Fucking zero. Zero. I've never written a penny of interest off on my house because it's never exceeded the standard deduction.
Right.
Right. So, and that's where a lot of people get that. They're like, oh, well, your house is like a tax shelter. No, your house is an expense.
Yeah, it's an expense.
Period.
Plain
from the time you become an adult until the time you die, your housing is an expense.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
No, you're absolutely right. And I also personally do not see housing for a second. A house is not an investment.
No.
Some people are like, oh, your house is an investment. No, it's not. A house...
It has the ability to be, but not
the way most people do it.
No.
Your house is not an investment. Like, if you took people like, oh, but then in 20 years or 10 years or whatever, I have all this equity built up and then I can take that equity out. It's like, look, if you took the same amount of money every month, $1,000, $1,500, $2,000, whatever you put into your house payment every month, if you took that and put it into an actual investment account, you would have way more money.
Right.
Than you would have on this other thing. Now, of course, you want a place to live, so you're kind of doing both at the same time, but don't think it's a good investment. You also paying property taxes on this. You're paying upkeep and maintenance and all this other kind of stuff that's going on, quote unquote, in your investment. My other actual real investments require no maintenance. Right? I don't have to fix the air conditioning
in
my mutual funds. Yeah. You know what I mean? I don't have to do any of that. So for me, it's like, no, I don't see it as an investment. And some people disagree with me on that. That's fine. But I think part of that whole American dream, like you mentioned, where people don't stay forever at their jobs anymore or whatever, like it's the same thing with houses. Like part of the American dream is like, get a good career, work until you retire, buy a house young, own it by the time you're 50 or whatever, live there until you die, and then your grandkids can come back and see where their parents grew up. You know what I mean? Like that kind of shit. It's like, yeah, nobody really does that anymore.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? No one's really doing that anymore. And maybe some of you guys are, and that's really cool. But most people are not doing that, you know? Because again, the house is not really that great of an investment. It's got to change and it's got to, you know, ebb and flow just as much as the rest of our lives do. And people are more willing to do that. Like, actually, I was driving with my kids this weekend through an older part of the neighborhoods where I live, and I was like, look at all these houses, guys. I mean, you're talking about houses just built in like the 80s, and which is not that old. These aren't old houses. You know, not old at all, but they're older than some of the other houses that were in the neighborhood. So we're driving down there, and I go, look at these houses, guys. What do you notice? And so they're like, well, there's more chimneys. I'm like, yep, people were less reliant on the system, more reliant on themselves. Well, if you notice, they're like, more brick. And I'm like, yep, more brick, right? Again, better, stronger, longer lasting. People were building for the future. They were building for the long haul. I'm like, what else do you see? And they're like, well, they're much smaller. I'm like, ah, that's a great observation. Look at, we can drive down all these streets and none of these houses are these giant freaking subdivision houses that are 3,500, 4,000 square feet with all this empty space, tall ceilings, and this perception that it's bigger.
Yeah.
But it's really not that much usable space, you know? And so we were talking about that, and they're like, well, how did people raise their kids in such small houses? And I go, well, more kids shared rooms back then. Like,
more kids went outside back then.
That's the other thing, too. But I'm like, look, man, people saw their homes and their houses as a different thing. I'm like, you guys, I go, when I saw my house, I saw it as a place to keep my stuff. You guys see a house as a place to hang out. That's a very different, and my kids are very outdoorsy. I mean, we were outdoors all weekend long. Yeah. Like, I'm not saying they're not that way, but they're definitely more like I was growing up than most other kids these days. But even then, just their mentality and how they've been kind of, you know, influenced by society has been a house is a place where you hang out. For me, a house is a place you kept your shit. It's where you slept, where you shit, where you had to eat dinner with your family if you had to be there.
And you washed yourself.
Like, that's where you went. You went there to do the most basic stuff. Look at, you know, Native Americans. Look at those people. Their homes were incredibly small.
Look at the size. So, master bedrooms, right?
Yeah, sure.
I know how big the master bedroom was in your previous home.
It was fucking huge.
Fucking monstrous, right?
Yeah.
What are bedrooms for?
I had a walk-in closet that was as big as some people's bedrooms.
It's like damn near the size of this studio.
Freaking massive.
Right? Yeah. So, my master bedroom in my house. Stupid. It's like twice the size of this. Maybe three times the size of this.
It's a big room.
If you add it all together. It's ridiculous. And that's where all that space comes from in those houses. So we're building a new house. Mm. And when we build our new house, we're going to increase our square footage because we're going to have an open basement. But all of our living space, all of our bedrooms are being cut down. Like, my master suite is going to be literally half the size that it is now. My kids' bedroom, about the same size. And then we're going to have another bedroom that's about that same size as a guest room. So I'm reducing my overall footprint. And it's going to be great. I can't wait. I can't wait to move into this much smaller, better built house. And I love the house I live in now. It's a great house. But the bedrooms are ridiculous.
Well, and you think about someone, even like in your house, or even in my old house, like, think about the wasted space there.
Oh my God.
My old house, huge freaking ceiling.
Massive ceiling.
Big, giant freaking open space. And it's like, what are we doing with all this space?
paying to control the temperature.
Paying to control the temperature. That's what we're doing.
That's all you're doing. Is it 100%
for all this? And from the outside, everyone's like, wow, this is a big house. And you go in and it's like,
really not that big.
Really not that big. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, there's a lot of rooms or whatever, but really overall, the space is about the same as any other house. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's so poorly managed. Because again, the way people were building houses back then, the way they're building them now, and all of this should be an indication of even like to go back to what we were talking about with like how to survive an economic crisis. Everything we're talking about with like how houses are different now and everything, this is an obvious indication of how even our idea behind how we spend money has shifted. I remember my parents, you know, to take us out to dinner, to spend that money
was a big deal.
Yeah. And they kept that money. Everything they did was, you know, they didn't really go into debt. They didn't use credit cards. They didn't do those kinds of things and any more than they had to, right? And I remember, like, everything we did was, like, a big expenditure. Money was, like, a big deal. How do we see that stuff now? Oh, I probably gone out to dinner 5 times in the last 7 days. You know what I mean? Easily. I just don't even think about it anymore. Yeah. And I'm easily spending more money doing that.
Oh, my God.
Than I should be. Way more money on food than I should be. Way more money ridiculous on those kinds of expenditures. And so the way that we build our house is kind of like, yeah, make it bigger, make it grander, make it cooler, make it look really awesome. I want to appear like I'm a big deal or whatever. Like all of that kind of stuff, it's the same way that we're spending the rest of our money. You know, I look at subdivision houses, having been involved in construction, these subdivision houses suck.
They're garbage.
When I say they're garbage, I mean they're garbage. You're talking about garbage walls with garbage insulation. Everything about these things is slapped together as fast as possible. Trim and finish. Dude, go start actually looking at the finer points of these huge, expensive subdivision houses. You look underneath cabinets and there'll be
footboards like
missing.
Dog shit.
You know what I mean? You actually go inside and look where things are attached to the wall. Garbage. You know what I mean? You get up in the attic and actually look how things were put together. Trash. These things were put together as fast as freaking possible. Slam, jam, wham together. Then we dressed them up really nicely from the outside. They looked pretty cool. Put
some nice granite countertops in them.
Yeah. Threw in some, what my dad would call, growing up construction, he called that gingerbread. You know? You throw the gingerbread on the house, and they buy it for more. You know?
Got it.
It's a garbage house, but you threw the gingerbread on it, you know? You threw really nice granite countertops. You know, you put a cool big tub or shower in there. It was like, oh my God. You know? So the point is that...
Dude, my shower's big enough for 4 people.
These are some serious first world problems.
There are some serious first world problems. But my point is, like, the point that we're making here is the kinds of houses that we're living in is reflective of the way that we're tending to spend our money. So are people prepared for economic crisis or change? Well, let's see. Let's rewind a little over a decade. People sure as fuck weren't ready then. Because I tell you what, I watched people who had big houses, brand new trucks, brand new quads, brand new boats, all these people, I thought, man, these guys are rolling in it. I mean, guys I would work with where I'm like, dude, you're making like the same amount of money as I am. How in the hell can you afford all of this?
With a shovel.
And that's then all of a sudden it collapses and they're on food stamps, truck gets repoed, house gets foreclosed, all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, that's how.
You were in debt the whole time. You couldn't
get it. I gotcha. So a lot of this is, you know, thinking about the future, like John mentioned, like actually planning for the future. Now, part of that, too, in the future mindset is, back to the saving thing, is saving intelligently. Now, if you just put your money in a savings account, freaking interest rate's garbage, right? A CD, you know, certified deposit account, 2%, 2.5% these days, maybe. Okay. Still not very good. So we're talking about investments. Now, when people automatically think of investments, they think like stock market, I got to go down to Edward Jones, get myself an agent or whatever. And that's all good stuff. Play the stock market, go down to Edward Jones, get yourself an agent, like start doing that kind of stuff. That's all good for you. And you learn a lot about the markets and how to plan and you know, where you want your money to be. And you can really diversify. You know, there's a lot of cool stuff you can use to diversify, you know, diversify your portfolio. But you can really do that. I mean, you really can. Like, you know, I try to put money in several different places because then this one's growing a little, maybe this one's not as much, et cetera, right? It all works out really well. You know, I've got some mutual funds. I play the stocks a little bit. I've got some variable universal life policies that I utilize. A little bit of everything. Not a savings account, though. I mean, I do have a savings account. There's like almost no money in it. I don't give a shit. It's a freaking 2% return. Are you kidding me? Or not even 2%. It's like 0.5% in a traditional savings account. It's a freaking joke, right? Another type of investment I put into, however, is
tangible goods.
Well, tangible goods and also other people's businesses. You know, like I try to invest into, there's a couple other people that I invest in their business. I own a part of, small part of other people's businesses, you know, and also tangible goods, you know. So you invest in tangible goods to the point where you buy low and you can sell high. So now I'm buying hard goods that are going to have an increase in price. Now I'm wrapping my money up into something that, depending on the increase in price, might have a better rate of return than other stuff, mm-hmm. right? And that could be, there's so many examples of what you can do here from a firearms world. Look, man, buy hard goods that you know are going to go up in price. Ammunition is getting more expensive. Magazines are getting more expensive. Guns are going to get more expensive. You buy low now while the market's in the trash, because it is. The gun world is in the garbage right now, so buy everything low. And then in a few years, when it's back up, even without some kind of great panic, it might just increase a little bit. And in a few years...
Because it'll all level out again.
Because it all levels out, stabilizes. And when it does that, you won't be finding the stuff for the prices you are right now. And things will be higher and you can sell for more. I mean, there's times I've sold, without even crazy panics, I've sold things, you know, that I bought for $20 for $40, $45, $50. And you're talking about, you know, 100 to 150% increase there. That's a pretty damn good increase. Mm-hmm. My cash money and freaking investment sure as hell ain't doing that.
Yeah.
You know, so look at hard goods. And we know the firearms industry, so that's what we do. But your industry, maybe you know some other things, or your hobby, you know some other things. Look around at that. You know, I got a guy who, I know a guy who does it with vehicles. He just flips vehicles. You know, that to me is that's a hard good investment. You know, he buys a vehicle that he knows is worth a certain amount of money if it was treated well. He buys it for $10,000. He puts $2,000 into it. He sells it for, you know, $15,000, $16,000. Mm-hmm. You're talking about a 50% growth in his money there.
Yeah.
You know, that's a huge deal. And that you're not going to see that in a traditional investment. Now, maybe that takes a little bit more work, but, you know, welcome to making money.
Yeah.
So hard goods are certainly something. Precious metals is a great way to start to prepare for economic crisis and change. You know, look at investing in things that, again, are going to be worth something regardless of the value of currency. You know, in an economic collapse, which, look, here's the facts, guys. If you look historically, we are overdue. Right? We're overdue based on what our economic growth has been doing. And the economic growth we have is a relatively false economic growth. So it's really important that we start to prepare for something coming up in the relatively near future. And one of those things could be precious metals. I consider precious metals personally to be guns and ammunition. But another type of precious metals, obviously, are things like you know, gold and silver and platinum and stuff like that. Look, silver is a highly manipulated market. They're all highly manipulated markets. Silver is probably the most manipulated market. I might be wrong on that, but based on my knowledge, it's the most manipulated market. But that being said, that's still something you can get that has a set value, and that value increases or decreases. Look, man, I bought silver at $10 and sold it for $19. You know what I mean? And 1 ounce, okay, I made $9. Not that big of a deal. But I had more than 1 ounce.
Yeah.
And so my increase was significantly different. You know what I mean? So you buy low and you sell high. So you, those are markets you can follow. You can watch the trends in them. And if it's kind of gives you something fun to do, you know, where you
and
can
it's
watch
not
the
just
trends
about,
in the market.
And it's not just about investing the money. It's about actually having the thing,
mm-hmm.
right? The gold piece.
Yeah.
Right? The silver piece. The copper.
Mm-hmm.
Copper. Huge market in copper. In all kinds of different forms, right? Copper is extremely valuable. Anyhow, sorry, total little tangent there. But it's about having that actual thing there. It's not just about investing in the gold market or the silver market, because then it's...
No, we're not talking about markets. I'm talking
ones
about tangible
and zeros.
Goods.
Yeah. Then you're in ones and zeros, and it's all Control-Alt-Delete. None of it fucking exists.
Yeah, having actual hard goods. Not to mention the fact, from a larger collapse issue, now you actually have a physical currency that's worth something.
Yeah.
Right. You go back to coins, now you got a physical currency. Go buy junk silver coins, gold dimes, gold quarter, silver dimes, silver quarters, stuff like that. Buy that shit, keep that shit around. Now you actually have a currency you can buy stuff with. Yeah, you know, it's worth a certain amount.
Pre-64?
There's actually a really cool website you can go to called Coinflation, and it'll tell you what all the different coins are worth. But Coinflation is a good place to go to check that out. So, you know, that's a big deal to have that available. And again, this is about, like, diversifying stuff. Like, you've got some money over here and some money over here. And when I'm talking about this, some people are going to be, well, I don't have a lot of extra money. And so people go, like, well, you have to have money to start this game. No, you do not. No, you don't.
No, because when I was a private, I started with, like, $25 out of a paycheck, every paycheck.
Yeah. Yep. You just start small because your profit, you may not be able to go out and buy 1,000 ounces so that when, you know, something, the market changes, you make, you know, $9,000 or something. Like, okay, maybe you can't do that. That's okay. But you what you can do is you can start taking the money that is extra, and we all have extra money. Right, that little bit of extra you spend on a coffee or this or that or whatever, man, you can save all that. Then you take that money, whatever's extra, you keep it, and you start saving for it. Maybe it's only $25 a paycheck. Maybe it's only $20 a paycheck. So be it, right? You're taking that money, and you put it into whatever of these things is interesting to you. Or you split up and put it into multiples. Look, man, during the last crazy ammo crisis, I was selling boxes of 22 rounds from between $60 and $80. And I wasn't, like, even advertising that. I wasn't gouging anybody. People were coming to me. I wasn't advertising, like, hey, guys, you know, like, everyone was gouging or whatever. I'm like, hey, man, people came to me. Hey, we'll give you this much for a box of 22. We know you have it. Sure, here you go. Right? I wasn't even actively selling it, and I sold a lot. And most of those were boxes I bought for $20.
Yep.
Yeah. So you're talking about a 300 to 400% increase in your money?
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the best investments I ever made. And all I used to do is, every time I go to Walmart, if I had an extra $20, I buy a box of 22.
Yep.
I had tens of thousands of rounds of 22 sitting around when no one could get any on the shelves. And when people call me up and say, hey, we really trying to get some 22, or I want to take my kid out shooting, which always pulls at my heartstrings, you know. I want to take my kid out shooting, or I want to go hunting or do something like that. You know, do you have any 22 to spare? It's like, yeah, what do you give me for it? What's it worth to you? Well, I see whatever the people sell it for, you know. Can I get a box for $50, $60? I'm like, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's a great increase on my money.
Yeah.
And guess what happened when all the 22 came back? Which right now, tons of 22 on the shelf. Guess what I did?
Bought more.
I went and bought more at $20 a box.
Yep.
Because that's where it's at.
Yeah, I got to start buying again.
I got an acquaintance that did that after Sandy Hook with 5.56. He bought a whole pallet of 5.56 rounds and sold them off by the case.
I bet he just profited like crazy.
Oh, my God. I can't remember if he said he made profit or... total, this is what he got, but $25,000 was thrown out there.
Oh, yeah.
So
that's probably his profit.
That's probably his profit.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. And that was an easy thing, right? Bought a pallet, got delivered to him.
Yeah.
Then he just sold it off piece by piece and made a pretty decent amount of money on it.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So that matters. Daily use goods. You know, when we're looking at preparing for a personal economic crisis or change, let's shift away from just money and think about daily use goods. So, like, right now, if you have some extra money, I mean, where can you invest your money? All right, so we talked about some ways to save and invest and create a budget and get out of debt. Always get out of debt. Do everything you can to get out of debt.
Get out of debt before you save.
Yeah, get out of debt before you save. There is no saving if you're in debt. If you're in debt, get out of debt, then save money. But there's daily use goods. So, like, for example, your soaps, your shampoos, your toilet paper, your paper towels, all the stuff that you use on a daily basis, you should have extras of. Because when it's good... right? When the times are good and you got some extra bucks, you should absolutely be investing in your future against personal economic crisis.
Because here's another thing. Prices on everything are going to continue to go up.
Yeah, of course.
Always.
And what happens until the end of time? You got fired from your job, or your company went out of business, or, I don't know, a natural disaster happened, or any other thing happened. You know what I mean? Drew was telling me a story the other day about a friend of hers, really well-off guy. He was a lawyer, and a really well-off lawyer. And his wife, I can't remember what she did. I don't think she did a whole lot. She had some kind of side gig or something like that, but mostly just kind of helped her husband run his practice or whatever. And then he had a brain aneurysm. Just out of the blue, aneurysm, right? Doesn't kill him.
Oh,
but
wow.
But it messes him up real bad.
Oh, no.
And now he's like, now he can't be a great lawyer anymore. What's he really good at? Being a good lawyer. What can he do? Be a good lawyer. So it's like... yeah, his practice and all that's worth a certain amount, but it's like now all of a sudden they're struggling. They're really struggling. His wife doesn't really have any great marketable skills outside of what she was doing for him. So it's like now you're looking at this situation where you go like, they don't really plan for the future. You know, because they had this huge change, and now they can't even afford the lifestyle that they used to have. But they still have the same houses and cars and expenses and vacations and stuff that they normally planned for before, is my point. Now, they're not doing that anymore. Right. But my point is, like, you don't know what's coming down the pike at you, man. You just don't know. You're driving home tonight, boom, you get hit by a freaking semi, paralyzed. How's that going to change your life financially? You know, it would change my life drastically.
Oh, yeah.
Drastically.
Mine wouldn't change that much, but I'm in a unique situation.
You can sew sitting down, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
I can teach sitting down, I suppose, but like how, well, I, just but, how my but life like and in, how I make money would change.
In general, though, my life wouldn't change all that much because, I'm like I said, I'm in a very unique situation. Yeah, and for those of you that know me, you understand that.
I can understand that. I mean, well, your life would change, but we're talking about economically. But
now, if the same thing happened to my wife, totally different
ballgame. That's your unique situation. So, but with daily use goods, it's like, for me, man, I keep my soaps 3 deep. I keep my deodorants 3 deep. I keep enough toilet paper to build a fucking fort with. Like, a literal fort,
like a no-shit, bulletproof, literal fort.
Hey, man.
It's intense.
In Doomsday, I will be the king of freaking toilet paper. Mitch and I have decided,
I'm
going
to set it
Mitch
all
is also
on fire.
A freaking toilet paper hoarder.
Not running out of it.
We're not running out.
Yeah, they are, because I'm going to thermite all of it to be a dick.
And then the hordes will kill you, because we will be the kings and they will be our peasants. We will pay them toilet paper. And then you'll be dead. And
you'll have no toilet paper to pay them with, because I'm going to burn it.
It's all right. I'll still be alive. I'll at that point, then I'll be the king of small shampoos, right?
There you go.
Because that's my
other
collection.
I'll be the king of hotel soaps and shampoos.
That's right. That's my other collection. But when you think about daily use goods, like if suddenly something horrible happens tomorrow to your financial capability, could you continue to live your life at least daily use-wise for another month, 2 months, 3 months? Like how long until you like have to go to the store and resupply?
I mean, if you're an adult and you're not taking advantage of places like Costco,
right?
You're missing something.
Yeah.
You know, I have a mini Costco is what I call it in my house. And it has all that shit. I'm not running out of that stuff for at least a month. You know
what
I mean?
It's called a food pantry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But something that people don't have.
But here's the thing. People go like, oh, I need a year's supply of food, or I need a month's supply of food or whatever. But then they're not thinking about the daily use goods. And remember that when we're talking about all this, if you have significant others or kids, this includes them too.
Oh, yeah.
This includes their favorite toothpaste.
Deodorant.
Not like, all right, kid, I know you normally use the little kid toothpaste, but it's hard times now, so you're going to start using the adult toothpaste. Like, that's going to be a drastic change for your kid. And not that they can't make the adjustment, but that's going to make your already difficult life more difficult. So stock up on the shit that your kids are going to use.
Yeah.
Be 3 months deep in that. Be 3 months deep in what you have. Be 3 months deep in what everybody needs, like toilet paper. So daily use goods is an important thing. Food, of course, is an important thing to kind of safeguard against. And man, again, you just don't know. You don't know when something's going to happen with the supermarket, you know, chains where they're not going to be able to get their food anymore.
The trucker strikes.
Trucker strikes.
In the past. Yep.
Natural disasters.
Bad crops. Mm-hmm. Like just shitty crop seasons. The Dust Bowl. Like mm-hmm. there's a... Dude, this entire
Axe
system
God,
is
right?
Dude, this entire system is balanced on a razor thin wire.
It is.
Oh, it's so fragile.
Yeah.
And just the littlest thing, dude, and this whole system's going to dog shit faster than anybody could possibly imagine.
So where I think people make a mistake stocking up on food, though, is they run down, they buy all the Mountain House meals, and they buy wheat, and they buy all this stuff.
Dude, hard wheat sucks.
You're not gonna
it's
eat that
hard
shit
to process
tomorrow.
And it's a pain in the ass to do anything with if you haven't already done it. And the reason I know both of those things is because I have done both of those things.
I agree.
You know, I have a little hand grist mill, right? A little cranky mill.
Yep.
That's
and
not much bigger
your
than
wheat
a bottle.
Up into flour,
right?
And now you have
a
flour.
And now you have like an eighth of a cup of flour and a sore arm from 3 hours of grinding wheat on the world's Fisher Price, my first fucking wheat grinder.
Well, now the problem is I got flour. We got to do things with that flour. And you can't just go to do the flour and water route. That's only going to keep you alive, barely alive for so long, right?
Yeah.
So, again, if you have kids or other people in your life, like all of us, again, sitting at this table, have had to do like the whole like, all right, I have $5 for the rest of the week. I'm going to go down to the store. I'm going to buy 10 things of ramen, right? It's two for a dollar. I can eat ramen twice a day for the next week. I'm good.
I bought canned goods. Yeah. I can't stomach ramen.
I'm gonna hang out with some people, see if I can get invited over to someone's parents' house for dinner.
Yep.
We've all played that game,
it's
right?
It's cuffing season. Gotta find me a girlfriend that cooks.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. So it's like, I get it, man. Here's the thing. If you have kids, a spouse, whatever, that shit ain't gonna fly. So it's like, you have to be stocking up on what your kids enjoy eating. I can't just tomorrow tell my kids, all right, kids, tomorrow, shit is hitting the fan.
We are out of Ritz crackers.
You're eating Mountain House now. No more Ritz, no more freaking, you know, fruit snacks, no more of that. We can't go to the store to resupply. It's Mountain House meals and freaking, you know, water and bread. Like, first of all, it's gonna savage their freaking digestive system.
You're gonna go through way more toilet paper than you expected.
Yeah, I'm gonna really reduce my stocks of toilet paper. Second of all, it's going to be tough. It's going to make an already tough situation tougher because it's going to be harder to get my kids to eat, which is already a big enough concern. If you're having a hard time putting food on the table for any reason, trying to get your kids to eat what you can provide, and they may not understand why they have to eat this. Well, I want the mac and cheese. You're like, well, we can't afford milk or butter, or there is no milk and butter or whatever, right? And maybe just get like snowed in. Like my sister had that happen to her 1 year. She got snowed in. They were living out in the middle of nowhere, Colorado. And her husband goes to work, and a huge freaking snowstorm hits. He literally gets snowed into freaking town. She gets snowed in at the house. And for like 3 days, can't even get to each other. Because no one's plowing the road to their middle of nowhere ranch house.
Right.
So you're talking about feet of snow that they can't get through.
That's crazy.
You know? So he's stuck in town trying to make it work. She's stuck at the house trying to make it work. And they have, what, at the time, 3 kids, I think? So it's like, good thing she had food storage. Good thing she had these simple things. Now, 3 days is not a long time, but think about the people you know that pretty much go to the market every 1 or 2 days, you know, because they don't keep enough stuff around.
They eat for themselves for mm-hmm. just long enough to sustain.
Mm-hmm. So it's like your food should include the things that you use at least a month so that you can start weaning yourself and those around you off of those food items and onto, you know, the maybe harder to digest freaking MREs and Mountain Houses and shit like that. You know what I mean? So in that same vein is also things like maintenance items. To fix stuff, to make stuff last longer.
Before you get to the maintenance items,
yeah,
you have to have the knowledge. That is one thing that a lot of people forget invest in. Right. And it's literally an investment. It's an investment of your time, your energy, and your effort. You have to have the knowledge.
I mean, as long as we're just talking about financial crisis and not like worlds turning into shit.
Sure.
If you can't take the time to YouTube something that you don't know to fix something, then you probably are going to be a part of natural selection anyways.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right. But the knowledge and not having to YouTube it. Because let's say there's an electrical issue.
Right.
Right. Let's say the internet's down. Good God, the world would collapse in a matter of hours if the internet were to go down worldwide for any extended period of time. We'd be living in the fucking Stone Ages.
100%. And right? I know that because Instagram went down like 6 months ago and everybody
losing their minds.
And that has like no value to your life unless you have a business basically run off Instagram.
Right? So having that baseline knowledge of how to frame something in, how to fix a leaky pipe, how to properly use duct tape to do any number of things that duct tape is usable for, and then having the items there.
Well, yeah, the knowledge, of course, is always going to be the most important because, I mean, that's what we talk about all the time on the show is that skills trump tools. So we know that. However, skills are made easier with tools. So it's like, maybe you go get your oil changed all the time by whatever.
I go to Walmart. Meineke or Walmart. Because it costs me $20 and I can do it while I'm shopping.
Now, wherever you go is fine. But let's just say you didn't have that money. Or let's just say that stuff wasn't available. Or let's just say you couldn't get there and you really need an oil change. Like, do you keep just one oil change worth of stuff at your house?
Yes, I do.
You know what I mean? Like an oil filter, an air filter, and some, you know, liquids, fluids, whatever, at your house so that you could perform that basic maintenance thing. Do you have an oil filter wrench, right? Do you know where your oil filter is? Can you access it? Do you have something to get underneath your vehicle with, jack it up with, jack stands? Do you have the capability to perform even basic maintenance on your vehicle just to make sure that maybe it's a hard time on money? I'd rather put the food away when what's the fable of the grasshopper and the ant, mm-hmm. right? I mean, I'd rather be the ant storing the food away so that, hey, when it's shit time, it's like, yeah, ant's like, no problem.
Yep.
I'm set. You know what I mean? I got all this food forever because I got it when the getting was good, right? My dad used to say, you got to make hay while the sun shines, you know? So it's like, yeah, man, I'm out there making hay. And then if the sun stops shining, no big deal. I got a little hay over here, you know? And so that's kind of the same thing with maintenance items. I'd rather buy these to me, these are investments that have value. What's their value? Well, if I put, let's say it cost me $30 to buy those supplies, $40 to buy those supplies. Okay, I buy those supplies, $40. What's $40 going to buy me in, you know, my other investments? Not a lot. But let's say I was averaging, you know, I don't know, 10% or something like that. You know, that's a pretty good investment. So now I'm 44% or $44, I mean. Okay, that's great. Let's say 6 months from now, oh my God, something horrible happens. I just can't afford to get my freaking, you know, truck oil change. Or it's just not available. The services aren't available because of some kind of disaster or civil unrest or something like that. But my truck needs an oil change. What's that $40 worth now? It's worth keeping my truck going.
Way more.
And
than
that
40
investment
bucks.
Is worth way more than $44.
Yeah.
It's worth everything because I got to keep my truck running.
Yeah.
You know, maintenance items on air conditioning, maintenance items on everything. You know, everything that you can use, it's something that's a user serviceable item, meaning you can actually fix it and you have the skills to do so. That's what we're looking at here. And on that same, kind of in that same vein, like what John was talking about, it is the skills require diversifying your skill set. Diversify your skill set to a point where not only can you handle your own basic maintenance and fixing and stuff like that,
but you're always going to be valuable to other people.
That's it. That's it. Like, I like to say, I'm proud to say, like, yeah, I'm a good instructor. I'm good at my job, man. I've been at this job for a while. I'm good at it. People recognize I'm good at it. I can say that. I'm not boasting or bragging. It's just that's how it is. I'm okay with saying that. I'm also good at other things. You know, I have other skill sets. I have other uses. If I had to go to work tomorrow doing concrete again, I could. You know, if I had to go to work tomorrow doing landscaping, I could. You know, if I had to go to work tomorrow freaking bagging groceries, I could. Mm-hmm. Like, that doesn't even require a great skill set other than the willingness to work.
Boom.
And so maybe if you're like, dude, how am I going to diversify my skill set? I work a full-time job. Consider going to college for something. Not going to college to get a degree, but like go to like the elective programs. Go learn a skill. Go learn a trade. Go get a side gig. You got a cousin who's a roofer. On your weekend off, go roof a couple jobs with them. Like, learn how to do stuff. Learn how to diversify your skill sets. And that kind of goes with our lifestyle, like always be learning anyways, but diversify your skill set. You cannot just, specialization is for insects, man. You know what I mean? Like, you cannot be just a one, that's a Robert Heinlein quote, by the way, but you can't just be like a one trick pony. You have to have the capability to do more than one thing. And there's nothing that you're gonna learn that's gonna be useless because you're gonna be able to apply that to other stuff. I even know people get out of the military and they're like, well, military didn't teach me anything. I fucking just rode in a tank the whole time. Now I gotta find a job. Not a lot of tank driving jobs around here. And I go, yeah, but what'd you learn while you rode in a tank? Let's articulate that. And now you actually do have some marketable skill sets. You're just not looking at it from that perspective.
The ability to work well in a team. The ability to work well in a diverse environment. The ability to work well under austere conditions. Like,
manage expensive equipment.
Leadership skills.
Yeah.
Like, that's like the one thing the military in general drills into you from the beginning. Everybody
even from the lowest
leader.
Enlisted person.
Which they mostly suck at teaching anyway.
But at least it's a concept that they're pushing on people.
Yeah, yeah.
That you are capable of leadership.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That you can stand up in a crowd and say, hey, I can do this.
Right.
Not everyone's going to do that. But the one out of 20 that they teach that to takes it to heart is now a more effective leader.
Right.
You're right.
And then the last thing I would say, and again, these are all just kind of our general tips for you know, preparing for a personal economic crisis or whatever, but don't rely on people to save you.
Yeah, don't rely on
the toaster's broken, man. Do not rely on the system. The system is not going
to
save you.
The system will eventually break if more people continue to rely on it. I mean, that's, you know.
So do not rely on people to save you. Don't think, oh, well, my neighbor's got a bunch of this, or my friend's got a bunch of this, or I'll just go to my parents' house or whatever. Do not rely on someone else to be there, be available, or even be willing to save you. Rely on yourself. Now, that doesn't mean you can't get with your friends and say, hey, man, I'd like to stock up on this. Maybe you could stock up on that. Or, hey, I'd like to learn more about finances. You're a financial guy. Maybe you could help me out with that. You know, and if, there's nothing wrong with that kind of, you know, mutually assisting people.
There you go.
But still have a plan to rely only on yourself so that you don't have to rely on another system. I mean, I know people are like, well, if I get fired, I'll just be on unemployment. I think unemployment's like $1,000 a month.
Yeah, it's like $238 a week.
That ain't that much.
Yeah, that's nothing.
You know what I mean? So it's like
hungry.
That ain't gonna be good in unemployment. People are like, well, I'll just get that. I can get some, you know, food stamps or whatever. Like, just temporarily. It's like you're literally selling your ability to be self-reliant because your backup plan is relying on someone else. It's not a backup plan, man. So, any other tips you guys can think of about surviving personal economic crisis or change?
Just proper planning, man. Like, piss poor planning on your behalf does not constitute an emergency on anyone else's. It's that simple for anything you look at in your life. You know, proper planning.
Proper planning prevents piss poor performance.
Right? Another military, right? This is my end goal. Okay, how do I get to my end goal? Okay, I need to do step one, step two, step three. Okay, I got to three. I got to ease off on that. So maybe I'm back to step two now. And financially speaking and planning speaking, you're always kind of flowing back and forth, kind of like we talked about on the leadership show a month or so ago, where you're always kind of going from that leader-follower. You're doing the same thing in your financials. You know, your ups and your downs and your backs and your forwards, because sometimes expenses happen, right?
Yeah.
You're driving home today and the engine blows in your truck, right? You can't plan for that. There's no way to plan for that. That's going to be a relatively large expense. But if you have planned appropriately over a wide variety of spectrum, then you're going to be better able to handle that. So planning, and then planning.
Also planning.
Yeah. That's what I got.
Anything from you, James?
No, I was going to say the same thing. Well, that and the financial spending plan, which falls under planning, but
exactly.
If you have a good spending plan, then you know that'll take you a long way.
Yeah,
not on $238 of unemployment a week, but
live within your means. That's the thing that a lot of people forget about.
Right.
That's why people's debt gets out of control. That's why you see a guy driving, and I see it all the time. See a dude driving a brand new F-250, F-350 with a giant fucking fifth wheel that's got a brand new side by side that. Like, look, dude, those things are cool, right? It'd be neat to have some of those things, but I guarantee
you. If you can afford to buy them, buy them.
Yeah, if you can buy them, buy them. If you have to take out debt to get them, maybe you should reevaluate whether or not you
have to. Because that's not good debt.
No.
The way that real money works is that most people buy stuff on earned income. What you should be doing is making your money work to create money and then use that extra money. The money that's being created by your money, that's the money you should be buying big expenses with.
You want to make money while you're sleeping.
If you are buying everything you have with only your earned income, then you are not likely to get ahead, or if you are ahead, you're not likely to stay ahead. Mm-hmm. You have to take your money and put it in such a situation that it works better for you so that you can use the money coming off that money to buy those things that you want. That's why the rich get richer and the poor get poorer.
You got it.
All right, you guys, if you need to get a hold of us, get us out to train with you, ask us questions, send us hate mail or whatever, info@trainingaz.com is our email address. Remember to follow us on Facebook and Instagram as The Arms Room Show, Independence Training, and Red Wire Gear. We are proud members of the Heroes Media Group, so make sure that you check us out, or check them out, I mean, and look at all their other shows that they have there. Next week, we're going to have a guest. Naomi Moss is going to be on our show talking about why competition is relevant to the armed citizen and why ladies are getting more and more involved in it.
Sweet.
Until next time, you guys stay aware, stay safe, and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room.